So hey, welcome to Panel by Panel. This is where we take story arcs and we talk about them. We bring you how it happened, when it happened, and how we perceive it now. I'm the fresh newbie. I'm the card carrying, the casual, filthy casual. I'll say it right one day. See, I don't even say that right. That's how filthy and casual I am. Charles McFall, and I'm driving this car full of crazy hosts that are joining me today. Today, we're going to be taking on... And I'm going to try to say it right, and these guys are going to correct me because it's very important to get the name right, but I keep saying it wrong. Crisis on Infinite Earth.
Nicely done.
Awesome. Awesome. There we go. So I've been reading comics off and on since the mid-90s. Really took a break a while there, and recently in the last 5 to 6 years, getting back into heavy reading. And I like story arcs. I like to call it Netflixing my comics. I want to get the whole storyline, do it in one shot, and just enjoy it, and it's great. Uncle George Doro is, as always, with us, the staple of Panel by Panel. He is the wise master teaching this young buck to take the cricket from my back bin, I think is what he said. That didn't work too well, but I've tried. Uncle George, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. How are you guys?
We're all good. And you've been reading since the 60s? 70s?
Comics since I was a kid, you know, about five, you know, I was reading cartoon based.
So 1990s.
But then I was introduced to Marvel sometime around 1970, 71. And I tried DC also a little time later. And I fell in love with the Marvel Universe at that time. DC, if the word existed then, was meh. Stuck with Marvel, but then Crisis was one of the things that got me to retry DC. So that's the angle that I'm coming in from on this.
Very cool. So what he means by this is joining us today is host, one of the great hosts of Breaking the Panel, found at giantsizeteamup.com/breakingthepanel, and of course blogtalkradio.com/breakingthepanel. Chris Wisdom has from day one been, you guys, this is a great show. I love the arcs. Do a DC arc. And our argument, George, always is, right? It's easy to do Marvel because it's Marvel Unlimited, and both of us have really cut our teeth on Marvel. DC doesn't make
and
it.
And I'm primarily a Marvel guy, so.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, this is maybe an occasional thing that we're going to give a try to.
Absolutely. And we're going to get a Patreon up. So if you would like to support the show, we'll let you know how to do that in the coming episodes. Once everything's solidified, we're kind of redoing the show a little bit. So let me tell you how this is going to go. We're going to do a spoiler-free overview in the first show of each month. We're going to do this twice a month. The first show of each month is spoiler-free. It's why you should go read it. It's the great feelings we had, what we got out of it, the experience of the first time reading it, both whenever it was read first and currently, because typically for me, it's new now, and that's how it's going. And then the next episode that drops in the month will be the spoiler-filled episode, and you get to come back and basically discuss it with us. And we're going to have a phone line for you to call your voicemails into. We're going to have email. We're getting that all in the works. We're growing fast. We're growing well, and we are going to need some support on that. But DC is hard for us because we have to go and buy individual copies to do these storylines, whereas Marvel Unlimited, we both paid a yearly subscription. It's a one-and-done thing, and we can catch a lot of story arcs there. So that's why we definitely tend to, besides the fact that we grew up both cutting our teeth on Marvel, that's why we do Marvel. And I'm sure our great producer who's joining us here today will cut that in half so I don't ramble nearly as much. Mike Woodard, the voice we've been dying to hear on any of our shows. How are you doing today, sir?
Oh, Charles, I'm good, man, and been eager to kind of wedge myself into Panel by Panel. I won't lie to you. This is my favorite show on the Giant Size Team Up Network.
That's cool.
Love them all. They're all my babies, just like they are, Charles. But this one
but
has
some of them are redheaded stepchildren. Some of them are awesome.
This is a show that has a special place in my heart because I've been reading as long as Uncle George has. Matter of fact, my first comic books that I bought with my own damn money were 20 cents a pop taken off of a spinning comic rack. And I used to get a dollar a week from the old man to spend any way I wanted. And I went out and got my 5 books, and they were all DC books.
Man, you can't even get 1 book for a dollar nowadays.
Nope. Times have changed. Yeah. So I'm with Chris. I want to see DC represented on the show, and we're going to make that happen. There are more and more avenues to lay hands on those books. And if we got to get them ourselves and kind of distribute them around, we will do that. But all that being said, let's get rolling. Crisis on Infinite Earths.
So let's kick the tires and light the fires. All right. So, Chris, you haven't got to really introduce yourself yet, but you're a host at Breaking the Panel, and you brought this book to the table. You wanted us to do Crisis on Infinite Earths because this, if I understand right, this was the first book you ever read, and it changed your life?
Yeah, absolutely. That's I can remember going through Dillon's, which is a grocery store. Kroger, I'm sure, is what you have in your area.
Yes.
Going through Dillon's, and it was some kind of just normal afternoon. I see the spinner rack, and of course I knew who Superman was. And the cover that I saw on the spinner rack that really caught my attention was issue 12 of Crisis on the Infinite Earths. And the first question you ask yourself is, why are there multiple Supermen on this? Why does Wonder Woman have gray hair? What the hell's going on with this thing? And who's the big dude? So you pick that up and you ask your parents, hey, can I get this? They look at it, $1.25. Ah, you haven't been a brat today. Okay. Bear in mind. Right. So bear in mind, I'm 6 years old as I'm picking up this comic book, and I devoured the thing. And it was so worn through by the time that particular copy of it got thrown in the trash. I mean, it didn't have a cover. Staple was barely holding the rest of the pages together. I think I had some tape binding or whatever, but I had that thing until, good Lord, probably 1998. And wow. That was one issue that I always pulled off and just started reading again and again and again. So
now, of course, you had to consume this story issue by issue. And I have the compendium, so I have no idea how this thing was broken down and published. I mean, I can tell a little bit. There's some markers in there where you can say, okay, this was a new chapter. But how many issues did you guys have to read, and how long was it? Was it once a month? Was it once a week? How was it?
It was... Go ahead, Chris.
Oh, yeah, sorry, 12 issues once a month.
Yep. Now, keep in mind, they'd been leading up to Crisis for about a year before then. There was this character called the Monitor that was kind of lurking in the shadows. And if like me at the time, I had enough disposable income to buy a bunch of books at around that time. And I bought every DC book I could get my hands on. And in multiple books, there was this character called the Monitor, popping his head up here, popping his head up there. And that in itself, not an unusual thing for the time. But keep in mind, the spoiler culture didn't exist at that time. So the DC wasn't promoting this upcoming major, you know, universe changing event. And again, you didn't even know about the Monitor unless you read these particular books. So guys like George and myself, who read them as they came out, and Chris, as he was able to get caught up, we're seeing things develop at a very slow pace at leading up to this thing that was going to happen. And when issue 1 of Crisis came out, I don't know about you guys, but it kicked my butt.
Yeah.
If I can throw in my personal history here.
No, so yeah, we're skipping George today.
Yeah.
I know. Cool. See, George's initials are George Doro, and on Skype, that's all I see is GD. That could either be God, which would, and then we have to say, yes, whatever you want, George, or it could be something else that maybe still you get your way, sir. Of course, bring us your history. We'd love to hear it.
Yeah, I joked with my ex-wife when she was pregnant that if it was a boy, I wanted to name him Gregory Oscar Doro.
Nice.
That as a May. So I'd always been a Marvel guy. I tried the DC comics and wasn't all that crazy about them. And I loved the characters in Marvel. I loved that it was a consistent universe. And that's one of the things that kind of leads into Crisis. I thought that the characters in DC were kind of confusing, that, you know, you got the Justice Society, you got the Justice League. Where does one end and the other pick up? I wasn't getting it.
Yeah.
And at that time, it was starting to become the age of the superstar artist, where you had artists such as John Byrne, Bill Sienkiewicz, Frank Miller, all up and coming, and people were getting buying comics based on the art for a lot of what they were buying. So I was very familiar with George Perez, and he was one of my favorite artists at this time. So when he and Marv Wolfman moved to DC, that's when I started picking up the reboot of the Teen Titans. And that I found to be a very enjoyable book. So as I was reading that, I had seen the Monitor pop up. I'd seen references to the Monitor popping up in a few other series. So I was reading a few comic-based magazines at that time, such as, I think, Amazing Heroes. And there were hints about this big thing to come. So it wasn't that DC was completely leaving us in the dark. They were dropping hints. And at that time, you didn't have this 3 or 4 month head start on what's coming up with the upcoming issues that you do now with the preview, and nowadays with the internet, where you can see what's coming down the line 4 or 5 months ahead of time. So it was they were building suspense, and it really piqued your curiosity as to what was going on. So when I finally did find out that they're doing this multi-issue miniseries, that Marv Wolfman was writing it and George Perez was doing the art on it, I was hooked. Before I even saw the first issue, I said, okay, I'm putting this in my hold slot. So looking forward to reading it that way.
So 12 issues over 12 months. Was this its own comic book, or as in today, like Marvel Civil War, it was actually done in individual books that participated? How was it handled?
Is same way. I want to say most of the books that were affected had at least one issue, if not two. I want to say like maybe Superman, Batman, the main guys that you usually think of when you think DC had two tie-ins, and then everybody else had like a crisis special or whatever. And it wouldn't even necessarily be like a whole issue devoted to the crisis. It would be like one portion of that book. It would just show how that storyline fed into the crisis.
Yeah.
And it also helped that those issues were marked with the Crisis crossover logo at the top of the book.
Yes.
Yeah, DC was really good about that. If you needed to search out a tie-in, it was right there on the cover for you, really obvious to find.
Wow, though. That's I can't fathom that, because other than Executioner Song, which we've talked about covering here on the show, Executioner Song was the only storyline I can remember reading issue by issue. And I had to go in and buy it. But it was every week, because this week would be X-Men. The next week would be Uncanny X-Men. Then the week after would be, I don't remember. X-Force. There's four books in it.
Yeah, X-Force and X-Factor, I believe.
There you go. Yep. And so I could just kind of back end it, you know, just bam, 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 bam. But everything else since then has been, let me grab the hardback. Let me grab the paper, the compendium. Right, the uh-huh. whole thing. So you guys talking about waiting a year to get to the end of this and having to piece it together yourself. That's crazy. I can see why though it grabbed you, because you can't wait till the next episode. So let's get into some of the overview of why people should go and read Crisis on Infinite Earths before we come back and do the spoiler. Chris, you know what? You've been the loudest in wanting to get this done. Why don't you kick us off with why this was important to you, why this hooked you, why should they go read it?
This is the best jumping off point for people in the last half century for DC Comics. This really, this clean things up for DC history, because everything that came before, when Marv Wolfman first pitched this idea in 1982, it all started because of a letter that he had printed in the editor's column for Green Lantern. He was complaining about continuity and how it was so hard to keep up with DC continuity and hard for fans to understand, especially as George was talking earlier, when you're talking JSA and JLA. And I'll add some pictures to the inside covers of issue one, and then the Crisis Mail from issue two. And these are all just letters from Marv Wolfman talking about the hows and whys of this book, how the creation happened. I mean, he sums it up really well. I'll just quote him from issue two. He says, "See, Dick," he's referring to Dick Giordano. He says, "See, Dick, I started DC mythology is so confusing, Sherlock Holmes couldn't make sense of it. Why don't we do a book which clarifies what DC is? Okay, so I mean, if, there you go, right there. If Sherlock Holmes can't figure it out, the average person can't figure it out. And it was hard because you had villains that were, you know, villains on one world, but then they had a counterpart on another world that was a hero, and vice versa. You had things that happened 20 years ago that may or may not have an effect now. You have things that happened yesterday that may or may not have an effect now. DC was really good, especially in the 50s and 60s, correct me if I'm wrong, George and Mike, about doing imaginary tales. And that's how they would do it. It would be in the normal action comics. It would say it right on the front, an imaginary tale. And it would show like the death of Superman. Superman Red Blue that we got in the 90s. That's a throwback, clear back to those comics when Superman, I want to say, I can't remember what color of kryptonite it was. He was exposed to a certain kryptonite and it split him in two halves, Superman Red, Superman Blue.
That term always amused me because, okay, which of these are not imaginary tales?
Exactly.
Well, there's that, I guess.
Really, go on.
Well, all the imaginary tales were a precursor to what we now know as Elseworlds and what ifs and that sort of thing. But DC definitely did it first in their kind of, you know, 60s hokey period, yes. So to speak, you know, and those were the ones that I cut my teeth on. As a fan of DC from the beginning, I understood what DC was trying to do, but I didn't agree with it. I had a real good handle on the multiple universes and who was on what different world and what time period they were supposed to be in, and mm-hmm. everything from the Zoo Crew universe to Earth S, which was where Shazam and the Shazam family lived, and the Nazi universe and the evil Justice League universe. All of that was well organized in my head. But I will acknowledge, if you were a new reader coming on at the time, almost opaque. Mm-hmm. So,
and that's where I,
you know?
So Crisis was a hard reset. And you see things grow out of that. We talked about John Byrne earlier. Almost immediately following March of 86 is when Crisis on Infinite Earths ends. You see the Man of Steel miniseries come out in from July, September of that same year. And that's John Byrne's seminal Superman work. I mean, there's no more influential work on Superman, in my opinion, in comics today or ever, aside from Action Comics number one, than John Byrne's Man of Steel miniseries. Now, they've gone and retconned the things that he retconned that were retconned by...
Holy cow, you just
Crisis.
You just went Inception on me, man. Don't
I
do
did,
that.
Right?
Holy, my brain flipped.
I think in the last 20 years, though, DC has found a better way of helping us separate the different realities and the multiverses. It's something that you can go to on the DC side and embrace in a way that you couldn't prior to Crisis. Because the problem that I feel as I go back and read those, And it's not any fault of their own. They just didn't have a mechanism for it at the time. Because we just talked Elseworlds and we talked What Ifs. Those were always known to be outside of continuity. But when it's Action Comics number 128, and you're getting an Elseworlds tale just like it's a normal story, that's where a lot of confusion happens. Is they're selling those Elseworlds and What If tales as their normal continuity books.
Well, that you do have to keep that separate. I mean, I've always enjoyed. I remember reading The Red Sun as a story arc, and like, oh, that was a cool alternate history to what went on. And what if, you know, it was definitely an Elseworld. I didn't know the term Elseworld, but I could understand that as a casual reader going, this is not the normal Superman. And it's couched that way. It's couched as we all know that Superman landed in Metropolis and Ma and Pa Kent, but what if he didn't? And it just goes from there. You know, expect us to be smart, but let us know, this is canon, this is not canon. And it's if I can follow Star Trek The Next Generation with its five different timeline loops that it did, and if I can follow Star Trek Enterprise where the whole damn thing was a timeline loop, I can follow DC Comics. Just let me know, this is real, this is what we're saying is the Bible, and this is everything else. And it's fine.
Yeah. Well, Crisis was part of the effort to get all that stuff organized. The only thing that I have a small sour taste in my mouth that comes from the end of the 80s and has to do with the fact that DC Comics, once Crisis had happened and DC moved forward with one unified universe, they, and this was published, this was a statement made by the editor at the time, around 87, maybe 88, Crisis happened, and that nothing before Crisis exists anymore. Mm. And at the time, not even any intention to reprint Crisis. That didn't happen until like 89, leading into the early 90s, when they realized, okay, there's some cash to be made here.
Man, that's just an executive thing. And we know sure. 80s, 90s, even early 2000s was turmoil for comics and the struggle of the companies to make money. And there was a boom in the early 90s and too many books got put out at once. And then it kind of popped, the bubble popped a little bit and it shrunk in. That's why Fox owns some properties that Marvel licensed to them, so on and so forth. And both DC and Marvel made it through. But there was a time in my history that I remember that might not be the case. They might not make it. And it's good that they both made it. But Crisis on Infinite Earths, I got to tell you, as a casual reader, well, okay, I'll have to get this out of the way. As a comic snob, because I am a filthy casual, but I just like certain artwork. I like it a certain style. And I just, even with Marvel, it's across the board. Anything pre-2000s where it's smooth and computer colorized, and I just kind of like, do I have to read this? And when Chris sent me this from 1984, I'm like, do I have to read that? Okay, I'll read it. But so I got past that. I was like, okay, I can do it. Because art's good. Don't get me wrong. There's great detail. There's great style. It's 1984 art.
Oh, I gotta disagree with you. I think this is some of the best comic art that's ever been put out by DC. George Perez is a master. And nobody, absolutely nobody, does hundreds of characters in a comic series like he can do it.
I'll give you that. He did lots of great detail. And this is why we have a panel, because I never want one voice to say, this is the way it is. That's not what Giant Size Team Up is about. That's definitely not what Panel by Panel is about. Panel by Panel is about us reading and enjoying the stories and giving what we enjoyed, what we liked, maybe, you know, sure, a little bit of what we didn't like, but it's a discussion. And we need to have those voices like that, where you can stand up and say that he was the master. Because I'm weird. I'll just say that. I know I'm weird. I know it's not that I don't appreciate what he did. It's the dot matrix printing, I think, that's what gets to me. I don't know. Mm. Love it.
Yeah.
I would love to see a hand-drawn original. I bet I would be way different about it. Maybe I wouldn't, but I don't know. Maybe I would.
There are posters.
His pencils were very clean and sharp and detailed. I met him at one of his comic book signings, and he just started whipping out this full sheet of dozens of characters as he was sitting there talking to the fans, and it was a wonder to watch.
Yep,
that's awesome. That is really, really cool. But as a going back to what I started, as a casual reader, jumping in, having no knowledge of the Monitor or the Anti-Monitor, no knowledge of Harbinger, and what I call him Fried Pickle because he's green and white. What's the character that keeps being
Pariah?
Drawn? Pariah. Thank you. He tickles me, and he shouldn't, but he does. It makes me laugh a little bit. But going back to opening this up with no knowledge of any of this, very quickly I was like, oh, this has been a setup. This has been going on for a while because they use some exposition in the book. The characters go, hey, we've heard your name. You've been providing guns to so-and-so. And hey, you've been doing this, and we fought the enemies that you supplied. So they really pulled me in very quickly going, okay, this is an apex of something they've been building to, and I could pick that up very quickly. And I could follow some of it, honestly, in my opinion, in the early setup, I think because of writing it for people like me to get into it, a little ham-fisted on the espionage and the intrigue of stuff that goes on, because I don't know that it's a spoiler. I didn't find it to be a spoiler, but we want to stay as far away from spoilers in this episode as we can. But there's some early on. Chris, if you were to break this down into acts, right? Act 1, 2, 3, 4. How many acts would there be in this story?
I would say three.
Okay.
There's the lead in, there's the big stuff in the middle, and then there's the final arc. But even the final arc, it's hard for me to say that the final arc is one single.
Sure.
But,
and fair enough. But what I'm trying to get, go ahead, Mike.
There's a fourth kind of thing going on there, sort of an aftermath. Before they get into the Man of Steel miniseries and stuff like that, they did do a wrap up that I did like. And they did it outside of the 12 books too.
Is that including the compendium, do you think?
Yeah, it's in there.
Okay, cool. Full disclosure, I haven't quite gotten to the end of this book yet. It's a lot. It is a lot of pages, and I'm loving it. I am. I'm loving every minute of it. So in the first act, yeah, there's always this setup. There's the domino setup. So there's some intrigue and some espionage and some confusion of intentional confusion of what's going on and the buildup. And I was like, okay, I see kind of where you're going, and I'm not sure what you're going to do with it. And then there's some stuff done with the Flash that was really cool. And you start to see these things put together. And to me, as a casual reader, knowing what I know about the 1980s, knowing what I know about myself in 1984, which I would have been eight or nine, somewhere in there, knowing what I know about the time, I liked it. I said, oh, this to me is a movie. Okay, you have the TV show, right? Let's compare this to what we know in modern day society. We can watch the Flash TV show, and each week is a serialized, this is what's going on, and they have a full season to get a story out. And to me, that's what a lot of modern day comics are like, is we know we're going to publish this book for X amount of time. So we're just kind of, sometimes you do everyday things in it, sometimes you don't. But then you have the big movies that hit the screen. We just saw Batman versus Superman. Of course, there's Age of Ultron, Marvel Avengers Age of Ultron. There's Civil War coming up, where you have 2.5 hours, and this whole epic tale has to be told. And it could lead into other epic tales, and it could touch on things, but you got your acts all contained in one thing. And as soon as I picked up Crisis on the Infinite Earths, it was, this is a movie. This is not your everyday comic. This is an epic tale that will change the flow of the story. And it was really cool to pick up on that. Again, some of the exposition was a little slow for me in the first act, but then it goes away very quickly, and they just jump into more mystery, more questions, more answers, more questions, and it's good. Mike, what is it that you love about this story?
One of the things that really, really kept me going across here was the sheer amount of stuff going on, and you just touched on that. We didn't have the kind of quote-unquote decompressed storytelling that we have these days, the carefully planned arc for the graphic novel or the hardcover or the, you know, the paperback version of this storyline. None of that was going on at the time. They had a very large, very intricate story to tell. They had 12 issues to tell it in, and aside from what amount of exposition they needed to get story points across, they didn't waste any time. Heroes started dying. Universes started dying right out of the gate.
Right out of the gate.
And this was stuff that there wasn't as much death back then. You know, back in those days, you know, heroes didn't sacrifice themselves and get killed at the rate that they did now. So when I started seeing characters that I'd been reading for years either vanishing into nothingness or sacrificing themselves for the greater good in a way that really felt permanent at the time, that affected me as a reader. That really, really hooked me in. And there are a lot of characters, you know, granted, that were invented for the series. Pariah being one of them, Harbinger being one of them, Monitor, but those are the obvious ones. There were a ton of little bit players that had momentary, tiny arcs that were almost,
they were the Star Trek red shirts.
Exactly. You know, they were there to move the plot along, and you're going to have that. So, you know, by no means was it a perfect storyline, but it was as close to perfect as we could hope for at the time. And I was on a 12-month long roller coaster.
Wow. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Now going back to refresh for this, this show, what do you feel about the story? What would you tell the audience why they should go listen or read it right now?
It's legacy. And leading into DC's Rebirth event, this would be an excellent time to go back and look at Crisis. It was built from legacy, even the name of it. You know, head back into the 60s, and I think even the first crossover between Earth 1 and Earth 2 that was Justice League and Justice Society was called Crisis on Two Earths, I think. So even the name of the event was legacy-based, and moving forward into the future where we live these days, you know, where we have our jetpacks and our flying cars. looking back at this event, if you can accept the style of artwork and the style of storytelling, which is different from what we've got today, yet still equally awesome, once you get past that and get into the storyline and start learning these characters and seeing the developments and the sacrifices and stuff that even carried into the 2000s with, and this isn't a spoiler, but Psycho Pirate being the only character who ever remembered everything that happened and drove him insane. But, you know, leading well into even the new 52, there's been little bits of hint that the Psycho Pirate knows of the Crisis on Infinite Earths, you know, the one crisis that kicked it all off. So if you're into DC history at all, or want to get a taste of what hopefully DC is heading to with Rebirth, Crisis is your way to go.
I'd go even one step farther and say, if you have any interest in the history of superhero comics, if you ranked the 20 most significant things that happened in comics for in superhero comics over the past 50, 60 years, this would be in the top 20 easily, top 10 probably.
Absolutely.
Because it was not only the first big event that was done right, it was hugely influential to every such crossover that came since.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I can definitely see that, how it was handled, how it was written. The influence, you can absolutely, as a new reader, looking at all the big stuff that goes on now with multi-universes or crossovers or any mega arc like this, you could see the influences here. It's like going back to Monty Python's Holy Grail, and, oh, I could see where this inspired this movie that was in the 80s and that movie that was in the 90s and so on and so forth. But that one was the inspiration for major sketch comedy, so on and so forth. George, you know, you piped up here. You said that at the time, DC was meh. You didn't really care about it. And you, except, of course, we heard the story about the artist you liked in Young Justice League, or not Young Justice League.
New Titans.
Sorry, thank you. New Titans. I'm mixing you. Holy crap. Yeah. That's not right. I'm surprised Chris didn't reach through the screen and just slap me one time on that one. But you picked this up. You were sold before it got to you. Obviously, you were not disappointed. I believe you would have said so. But did it meet your expectations and just blow them out of the water? And how does that compare to re-going through it now?
Yeah, it met my expectations. Pretty much what was going on there with DC is what I call the Marvelization of DC. Because prior to that, I thought that Marvel had better fleshed out, more believable characters. They had faults that I could identify with that I didn't see in the DC characters. And then as business decisions forced lots of writers and artists to move from Marvel to DC, they brought that mentality with them. And suddenly the DC characters were becoming more interesting. You know, Robin wasn't just this punk kid. Marv Wolfman, when he made him leader of the Teen Titans, well, when we brought back Teen Titans, we got to know him as the leader, he really fleshed out the character to a degree that I don't remember seeing before. So a lot of the writers and artists that used to work for Marvel at that time were now working for DC because they were getting better pay, they were getting better royalty deals, You know, everything was better for them than Marvel was offering. So it was a real talent drain from Marvel, and that was to DC's benefit. So Crisis was the epitome of all that. It was a writer that I loved because one of my all-time favorite series is Tomb of Dracula, and that was written by Marv Wolfman from, I think, issue 7 up until its end, issue number 70. And so I was a fan of his. I was following his work rather than particular characters. So well, I was following characters as well, but it made me take notice of his work that I wanted to follow it as well as the various characters. And then, of course, the artist, George Perez, being one of my favorites at that time, I wanted to see what he was doing. And so knowing that they were doing Crisis, and I wasn't familiar with 95% of the characters that show up in the book. But I did get to care about each and every one of them, even the ones that show up for one panel and have, you know, two words to say in their word balloon and they're done. So, yeah, it met my expectations, and they were pretty high. So I can't say they really exceeded them, but I was very pleased.
Well, that's still great praise, you know, that you're pleased. Mm-hmm. I can tell you, as a new reader to it, this set the tone for what I came into a decade later loving. Just deeper mm-hmm. character realizations, bigger storylines, epic arcs, things that mattered. Of course, we make the joke now that death doesn't matter in comic books, and it doesn't. I wish it kind of did.
It doesn't.
But I could tell here it did matter. It was important. I remember
like it did at the time. Yeah.
Yeah, back then it did. Yeah.
Yeah.
You got to remember, there's still a world without Bucky on the Cap side. A few years later, we lose Jason Todd. We don't get him back for years. In this story, we have characters that we lose. That's one thing that I like when Sam was talking about, or when Mike was talking about Secret Wars. Really, the only change that stuck to my mind that I can actively remember was the black suit Spider-Man after mm-hmm. that storyline. Everything else in Crisis, there were stakes in that book, things that happened that mattered that stayed that way for years. And that was, so you get these company crossover events that I tend to poo-poo at nowadays, because both houses do it. They do it every year. And it's like, come on, these don't mean anything when you do them every year. But back then it did. And so this is where you get the idea for those things. But when it happens every year and the changes never stay, that's where we as comic fans start to get a little jaded. But back then, this is what kicked it off.
Mm-hmm. Very much so.
That's awesome. Trying to think of what else. Okay, so let's give a little bit of the storyline, and then we're going to let people go and read the books, and we'll come back with the spoilers in a couple weeks. So Crisis is the universe's, the antimatter universe is breaching into the universe that we know, which is the matter universe, and
into the multiverse that DC had established.
Yes, thank you. Yeah, because you're right, I did say that incorrectly.
Look at it this way: you've got the antimatter universe, and then the positive universe is made up of multiple universes. So I know that sounds a little bit confusing, but it makes sense in the context of the story.
Yep.
No, I get it. Hopefully you'll go and read it, and you'll get it if you read it. Yeah. And you don't have to keep track of Earth at first. Just ride with the story through the setup, because there's a lot going on in the setup. So it's not chaotic in the writing. It's chaotic in the feeling, right? You're supposed to feel that, holy crap, what's going on? This is going on, because you're following Pariah for a good section of the first couple of pages, I guess you will, because I don't know what books it was broken up into. So follow along with that. Understand that, yeah, these deaths matter, and things, I like how people react to them too. They have very real reactions to it. And every time when somebody shows up, you've done this to us and blamed, then there's a nice middle area where things kind of get explained, and that's intentional. They kind of get explained. They kind of go out and then do things, and new things happen. It's a progression. You keep following on, and there's twists, and there's turns, and there's powers. And I hit a point where I was like, oh, the book's almost over, and I tapped the screen because I'm reading on my tablet and I tap the screen and it pulls up sub menus. Basically, it shows me dots across the bottom of how far the book is. And when I thought this thing was almost over, I'm barely halfway through. I was like, oh, okay. Where can you go from here? It's 500 something pages long, I think.
And it's very dense.
Yes, it's very dense. So you're going to have a lot of reading to do in 2 weeks before you hit this next, you listen to this next podcast. Great story arc. Great side characters. I love when they pulled in the doppelganger's not the right word, but the alternate versions of the people we knew. You know, the alternate versions of Supergirl and Batgirl, and I think they did some male-female swaps as well. I don't think this is one of them, but it's the only character I can think of right now. Firestorm, in the universe we know, is the male Firestorm. I think in one, maybe it wasn't his character, but in another universe, it'd be a female Firestorm. You know, those kind of things. So it was very cool. Then, once you think you got a handle, okay, they've narrowed it down to a number of Earths. I can follow these Earths. Then they start shuffling the deck. Time, space, goes right to the, and it all starts merging like, holy crap, I got another headache. Let me take a break. I'll come back to this. But it's one word can describe this entire storyline that I've reserved until now for all the different stories that George and I have read for the shows. And this one is truly an epic tale. The word is epic. It is above and beyond. So I want to leave this with one more thing from the guys. I'm going to throw it out to you. Try not to talk over each other as best you can, but I don't know who to call on first. But the question is, will this be a movie, and could they do it in one movie?
I'm gonna start off because I'm about to throw it over to Chris. Chris made a comment on one of the last three or four episodes of Breaking the Panel that I will distill down into a concept called Crisis on Multiple Networks. And Chris, you know what I'm talking about, so you take it from here.
Okay, so you're talking about the idea that I had?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So with Marvel, with all the Marvel on-screen properties, we've got a unified universe, right? We don't have that with DC, and DC needs to play that and play it hard. And honestly, on seeing BVS, there was this particular scene that I thought was a nod to Crisis. Later, after finding out what was actually said, I don't think it is. I think it's to another property.
It kind of is. It's a merged sort of thing. It's a nod to Crisis, and it's a nod to Injustice, and it's a nod to Dark Side War, all kind of mashed together.
But what I was thinking is, especially, and Flash is the place to do it right now. It's got to be done on the CW because they've got the room to move as far as creatively. Nobody's telling them no, which is awesome. It's you've got the best the best possible place to do this. And it's very simple. I mean, you do simple things like you just show the outside of a building, you know, a big skyscraper or you know, a cityscape. And down in the lower left-hand corner, you see Metropolis, current day, and then like a timestamp or whatever, right? So sure. you see a female, she's sleeping in bed. Brunette with streaks of gray in her hair. You never see her. An alarm goes off. She gets up. She goes about her day. You see her step into the shower. You see her cooking breakfast. You never see her face. Then all of a sudden, a whoosh.
And you're a little bit of a stalker, man.
Yeah, a little bit. She's setting up. You see a curtain fly or whatever, some papers rustle, whatever. And then she says, "You left early this morning." And you see who it is that enters, and it's Dean Cain, Superman. You throw some gray in his temples. Throw some gray in his temples, and there you've got your Earth One Superman, or your Earth Two Superman, excuse me.
Unfortunately, though, didn't ABC do that version?
Crisis Multiple Networks.
Yes, exactly.
Oh, all right.
Pay attention, Charles.
I don't know. And yes, ABC did Lois and Clark, but it's still a Warner Brothers joint, so I don't know how. I don't know what the legal structure of that is, but you can still have them play as long as they don't nod to get too specific. And then all you see is you turn, you got your Terry Hatcher, Lois Lane making breakfast.
Right.
And all of a sudden something happens. The screen starts to fade to white or the brightness, however you want to do it, and she just starts to disappear, whatever. And then somehow you have Superman reach for her or something, and whether it's Barry that comes in and grabs him or somebody else, if this is where you introduce Pariah, I don't care.
Sure.
But you have him grab him, and then you just do that for the next year and a half. You just take about 30 seconds to a minute of each of every Flash episode, every other Flash episode, and you just do a little thing like that. You can go back to the Superboy TV show, the Supergirl movie. I don't care. Bring them all in.
Wow. The
Flash TV show, all the different DC hero properties throughout the last few decades, and nod to them all, but in a Crisis on Infinite Earths kind of a mode, and then pay it all off on Flash.
Okay. So are you visualizing George Clooney and the bat nipples too in this?
Yeah, they do something that say like, oh, you're not worth saving. We got a better bat.
Oh, hi, man. So what you guys are talking about is something I've talked about forever, ever since I read Infinity War in Marvel back in the late 90s and Infinity Gauntlet, is that really stuck with me. And then as I grew up and I started watching these little TV shows, and like you said, you have Lois and Clark over here that doesn't talk to, it wasn't on at the same time, but it doesn't talk to the Flash that's over here. And then Marvel came out and launched Iron Man, and then they did the Incredible Hulk, and then they did Iron Man 2, and then they did the, I think it was Thor and Captain America, and then the Avengers. And I was like, oh my God, they are finally doing what I've wanted them to do for what feels like forever, is cooperate and tell these stories that are told across the board. You cannot do Infinity Gauntlet without everybody. And for so long, studios were saying, no, we're not going to do this. And we made such great progress in geekdom that a Marvel studio is doing that. Now DC studio, the Warner Brothers studio, is now doing that. That they're going to start building a universe where we have these cross characters. But you just pointed out that they're kind of, Greg Berlanti is pushing that envelope as hard as he can, as fast as he can, where we're getting that crossover from Flash to Supergirl on different networks. Only because his production company, I think it's only because his production company has done it all. Done Arrow, Flash, Legends of Tomorrow, Supergirl. I think there might be a few others out there tied into this. But it's a start. And I think we are, and tell me if you disagree, by all means, but I think we're a good 5 to maybe 10 years away from that kind of thing working. What do you think?
Yeah, I think so.
It might even be a little closer than that. We're in a situation now where, you know, the big standard bearers, the guys waving the flag, Berlanti, Geoff Johns, the guys on the Marvel side whose name escaped me right now, these guys are us. They're the geeks who have inherited the reins, and they're driving the bus. And there's so many, as much great stuff that has happened already, there's so much in the near future. And we'll get a version of Crisis on Infinite Earths. I am certain of that. I don't know what form it's going to take, but we're going to get a version of it.
Okay. That would be very cool. Absolutely. Now, the other last question I have is, did they ever do a DC animation? Because that still would suit this so well.
Not this. They haven't.
Not this. Because that would be DC. A little quick plug for DC. If you have Netflix, tons of great DC animation is now on Netflix. I have been eating it. I watched Justice League Flashpoint. I'm in the middle of Justice League War right now. Mm-hmm. There, I saw that there's the Son of Batman on there. There's so much good stuff you can watch if you have Netflix. Of course, it's in the stores. You can go buy it. Go to Amazon and buy it. But it's so good. And I think they could do such an amazing. I almost would rather have this in animation with how good the DC does animation than even a live action. Although I would take both by all means.
I agree with that. The stuff that DC has done animated that you'll find on Netflix right now, it's all shared universe. That's all happening in one world.
Because they own it all, so they can, just like the comics. Yeah.
So all the Batman storylines are all linear. If you go back to everything from the Flashpoint animated thing on, everything happening there is linear. All the Justice League stuff, it's on a different branch, but it's all linear to the same universe. Uh-huh. And I do agree with you that we'd almost be better off getting Crisis in an animated form. But that being said, the Green Lantern animated show, did any of you guys watch that before it got canceled?
Yeah. Very much so.
I was saying, there was a nod towards Crisis, yep, towards the tail end of that. The Anti-Monitor was in at least one episode towards the very end.
Yep. Nice. And I wasn't, honestly, because at that point, you're talking post Blackest Night. So yeah, anytime the Anti-Monitor shows up, it's a nod towards Crisis. But I thought they were setting up for Blackest Night, because you're already seeing the whole spectrum of rings in that show, which I loved.
Mm. Oh, yeah. And had to cancel it, I think we would have gotten there too.
Yep.
Now that's a story arc I'd love for somebody to sponsor us to do. And by sponsor us means we need to cover the cost of getting these books, either physically or digitally. I would love to do Blackest Night, because that was, I am not a huge Lantern fan. It just is too, no. It's good. It's good. I have nothing bad to say about it. It just doesn't hit my buttons. Certain storylines do. Others just are too political, too weird. I don't know what to tell you about it. It's hit and miss for me, because it's again, I'm probably hitting continuity issues more than likely, because I am, you know, casual about it. It's like, oh, here's a Lantern book. I don't understand this book because I didn't read the 5 or 20 before it. And then there's ones I pick up. Like, oh, this is Blackest Night was one of the ones I picked up. I was like, this is what a Lantern book should be to me. This was epic. This was the universe. Lanterns are the guardians of the universe. And so if I don't get some feeling of universe to it, it's weird to me. I would love to do Blackest Night on panel by panel. George, you've gotten to ride the microphone a little bit today. But we've been talking a lot. What's the one last thing you want to tell anybody about the book, or anything that needs to be said about anything that we've covered today before we get out of here?
I'm just going to paraphrase what I said earlier, that if there is a list of the, say, 500, let's go with that number, the 500 comic book stories that you must read before you die, this is definitely at the top. It was the epitome of what DC was doing in the 80s, and the influence was just so far-reaching. It, as far as superhero comics go, it's one of the most important series out there. So read it. It's fun.
You heard the man. There you go. We are an amazing part of the Giant Size Team Up Network. Maybe we're the most amazing part of the Giant Size Team Up Network. Definitely different. Love doing the show as much as you guys love listening to it. And we're going to be making some minor changes. We have some continuity issues of our own, but we're going to be solidifying those going forward. I want to thank Chris for coming over from breaking the panel and sitting in with us today.
Absolutely.
And you can get that every week at GiantSizeTeamUpNetwork.com/breaking the panel. It's on iTunes. You can subscribe. Great show about news, headlines. It's opinions based. It's definitely an op-ed, but again, it gives you your arguments that you want, your opinions that you need, and lets you go away laughing and thinking, which is always the goal. And of course, you can subscribe there through iTunes. Mike, producer for most of the shows on Giant Size Team Up, we loved having you here today. Thank you, sir.
Thank you for having me. This was a ton of fun.
I love the context that you bring to the table. And so I think we're going to be asking you to do that some more going forward. So everybody, of course, George is here every single time with us. And it's hard to imagine doing a panel by panel without George. So I love that you're here, George.
That's so kind of you to say.
And we're definitely trying to get scheduling issues resolved to make it better for everybody, because it's all about, to me, it's all about the experience and experiencing what your guys' stories growing up here, because I just don't have those stories. Experiencing it through your storytelling is a great part of what this show does, and I appreciate you guys coming.
You have those stories. We ours just go farther back.
Well, okay, yeah. I will give you that. I just don't. When I was 6 years old and wanted something, it was a piece of candy. It was not an epic comic book. So. I definitely appreciate you guys doing that. Of course, I am all over the Giant Size Team Up Network with From the Helicarrier, Breaking the Panel. It feels like I do more, but I don't think I'm on any more than this show as well. So this one you can also find on iTunes. Subscribe, tell your friends, get it out there. We are on the Giant Size Team Up Network, and you can follow us also on blogtalkradio.com/GiantSizeTeamUp. We're on the edge of getting our own sponsor as well. We're going to be bringing that in. So sponsorships are great. We'll bring you that information as we come. Thanks for sticking with us through the slight break. You're going to get some more awesome stuff to us. So here on to the book club. Go read Crisis on Infinite Earths. And in 2 weeks after this episode, you'll get the spoiler edition where you get to come in and talk about all the different parts. Well, we come in and talk about all the parts we loved, and you get to feel like you're a part of that conversation. And of course, you'll be able to email us. We're getting all that lined up. All right. Until next time, try to keep your continuity straight. We'll be bringing some more DC to the table.